start by giving a warm welcome to Commissioner Vera Jourová, responsible for justice, consumers and gender equality, and our former colleague Commissioner Carmen Novella, responsible for the environment, maritime affairs and fisheries, and to all delegations. I also thank you for finding the time to have this exchange of views with us. Now I introduce those present. Honourable Silvio Parnis, who just joined us, is also a member of parliament from the government side. Dr. Paula Mifsud Bonnici from the opposition side. Dr. Francis Amid Demek from the opposition. Mr. Andrews De Celis from the government side. And Frederick Atsopardi from the opposition side. And he's also a member of parliament from Gozo, the sister island. Whereas Commissioner Jourová, please, I'll give you the floor so that you can first make your own comments, and then we'll open the floor for any questions that can arise from the floor. Please press the button and get the microphone.
Thank you. I'm afraid there is some echo. Can you hear me well? Or yes, wouldn't it be better without this?
It's been fixed.
It's been translated.
It's been fixed.
Okay. So, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, dear Carmenu, I'm very happy to be here and to have the opportunity to present to you the things which we are doing and planning for the upcoming Maltese presidency. I have two news: one good and one bad. Yes, the bad is that I have here a very long speech. Good news is that I'm not going to read it. Yeah, fine, okay. So, because I guess in this format it is better to have a very short overview at the beginning and then to have a space for discussion. So very shortly, I am responsible for gender. We already had here very, very good discussion with the Prime Minister and with Madame Helena Dalli, who is my counterpart in this country and who has very ambitious plans for the presidency. We are in gender policy planning to come with a package for better legislative and non-legislative measures for better balancing private and professional life. So measures for working parents and a non-legislative more money for kindergartens and creches for facilities. And I know that here you have free of charge services, so this could be important also here. More women into decision-making positions pushed by legislation and non-legislative measure and so on. We are planning a big campaign focused on violence against women. We are starting next month, and main substantial part of this campaigning period will come under the Maltese presidency, and here I also rely on the support of the key institutions, persons in Malta to help us with this campaign. I can give you details, but I just want to go very quickly through all things. In criminal justice, I hope I will be able to finalize this year the proposal for the establishing of the European Public Prosecutor's Office. This is the older proposal, which I inherited from Vivian Reding. And this should be the first ever institution in the field of criminal justice having decision-making power at the European level. The prosecutor should prosecute the criminal offences on financial interests of EU, so structural funds. Speaking about fraud and corruption, structural funds, agricultural fund, customs, plus big cross-border fraud on VAT. This should be the remit of the prosecutor's office. And I hope I will get it adopted by the member states. I need unanimity. And so you can imagine I will fly like a stewardess now in the next month, because I have to come to all the member states where we have yellow card for the prosecutor and convince them that this is the proper thing to do. By just one figure, we have around the estimation of around 50 billion euro per year of fraud on VAT, which has this cross-border scope. 50 billion euro. We have the duty to address it with some solution and some. I cannot help it. We have to act. So, because the member states are not able to prosecute on their own on national level this kind and this scope of fraud. So we have to join forces. So this is EPPO. This is my main priority for now. We will have plenty of work with Oven Bonici, with my counterpart in justice sphere, to achieve the adoption of the two directives, which are called digital contracts. We are harmonizing rules for online selling, which, knowing the figures for Malta, are crucial because you need to use the potential of the single market, and especially digital single market, which is the growing, emerging sphere, and your traders and your consumers face a lot of barriers. The fear of buying and selling abroad, and because there are not harmonized rules. And so we understand this is again the proper thing to do, to harmonize the contractual rules so that nobody is surprised when he or she buys something defeated, and the traders should not invest in creating different regimes in member states when they want to sell there. I think that the rationale here is very clear, and for Malta this will be only good if we get it through. We are also going to submit on the 22nd of November the new proposal for insolvency and preventive restructuring, because we have too many companies failing and falling down and sent to liquidation directly without giving them the possibility to restructure. And this is pan-European huge problem. We have 600 companies falling down every year in Europe. Every day, and this is worrying figure. We are losing almost 2 million jobs every year through this lack of support for the companies when they occur in financial troubles. We need to address this. So this is going to be a directive or regulation. Directive submitted to the council, to the college in November, so it will come under the Maltese presidency in the first quarter of the year. There are some other things. Perhaps I will mention one more. I got the mandate from the Ministers of Justice to start a dialogue with IT providers, the big players, Facebook, Microsoft, Twitter, YouTube, and others, to push them to delete hate speech, the cause for violence, because this was increasing. It is worrying what's happening in Europe, and they have to act, because internet must not be the sphere without law. And so this is the code of conduct which they adopted, and I will inform the Ministers of Justice now in December and then under Maltese's presidency about the progress we make in this sphere. This is highly political and highly needed. We need to address violence on internet, and I'm just mentioning it for the case you want to ask. I'm sure I forgot something important, but I don't want to use all the time here for my issues, because I know that Carmen is ready to speak as well. Thank you very much, and I am ready to answer the questions.
Well, thank you very much. Now I will ask Commissioner Vella. At this time he will focus on the Commission Work Programme in 2017, which was issued a few days ago. The Commission has identified 10 priority areas for next year, and at a glance, one cannot but note that certain sectors are of a particular relevance to Malta, and they've been featured among its EU presidency priorities, like migration, digital economy, and growth and jobs. So, the floor is yours.
But I won't be dealing with them. Specifically today, I will be presenting the State of the Union speech, which
all right. I thought we were going to.
But I have
already discussed the presidency program. In fact, I was here last week and I had met Herrera, Galdes, and Mallia. I have two bits of bad news. One is I have a long speech, and the second one I have to read it because they have to because they have to put it on the social media. So you have to bear with me on this. Well, as I said, my main reason for me being here is to elaborate on the State of the Union message, which was given by our President Jean-Claude Juncker in the European Parliament on the 14th of September. And along with you, I would also like to welcome Vera for her first visit to Malta, hoping this won't be the last. I would like to outline the challenges that this Commission is facing, and in doing so, I hope that it becomes clear that even during the short term that we have been as a Commission, we have achieved some good progress as well. And during that time, the Commission has also demonstrated its commitment to a new partnership with national parliaments as well. Individual commissioners have engaged in dialogues with almost all the parliaments in the 28 member states. Altogether, my colleague commissioners, we have made some 400 visits to houses of representatives in the 28 member states. This was one of the commitments made by our President again in his 2016 State of the Union address. In this Parliament, this was very clearly illustrated also by the last visit of Vice President Frans Timmermans only 3 weeks ago. And I have discussed my portfolio's issues with this committee twice in this House, June last year and March this year, with the Environment and the European Affairs Committees. I also met a delegation, a group of Maltese parliamentarians, which were led by the Speaker of the House, Farrugia, Speaker Angelo Farrugia, when they visited Brussels last September as well. Well, the main message from the State of the Union is very, very simple. Europe needs a long-term vision. Europe needs a vision for the long term. And this need has been brought into sharp focus by the Brexit referendum result as well. And we will strongly resist, we will try to resist any short-term measures wherever possible. Therefore, the Commission will be setting out such a vision for the future in a white paper which will be coming out in March of next year. This hopefully will coincide with the 60th anniversary of the Rome Treaties, and it will also come during the Maltese presidency of the European Union. In fact, a lot of preparatory work will take place next January at an EU summit here in Valletta to kickstart the presidency. So this will be a very important EU summit in January next year in Malta. As President Juncker said in his State of the Union speech, we will address how to strengthen and how to reform our economic and monetary union. And we will also take into account both the political as well as the democratic challenges our union of 27 will be facing in the future. And of course, national parliaments will be closely involved in this process as well. The 10 priorities which were outlined at the start of this Commission's mandate still serve us well, and we still continue to build on them. As the President made it clear in his letter to the President of the European Parliament, when we focus on the big things, we can deliver tangible results in crucial areas. 16 months have already passed since the launch of the EFSI, the European Fund for Strategic Investment, and this is the core of the EU investment plan. It is a central plank in the Commission's plan to create jobs and growth and to attract also investment. And I am happy to report that the fund is already active in some 26 member states, with 116 billion euros in investment already being activated. 200,000 SMEs are now having the benefit of having accessed this new financing facility. In Malta, the European Investment Fund, the EIF, and the APS Bank have signed the first SME financing agreement in Malta, and the first under EFSI, because there were similar agreements which were signed before between EIB and the Bank of Valletta. And this agreement will allow the APS Bank, similar to what Bank of Valletta has been doing, to provide low-cost loans to innovative SMEs in Malta over the period of the next two years. Our second big challenge has been, obviously, you all know and you are experiencing it, on managing migration. We have made substantial progress. In particular, we have greatly reduced the loss of lives in the Mediterranean and the Aegean Sea. We have relocated and settled over 13,000 refugees in the past year, and this is only the start of our efforts, because preserving the Schengen Agreement and the freedom to move within our Union is also central to our considerations. Our collective decision to set up a European Border and Coast Guard, and this was the scheme which was launched on the 6th of October, is already showing what we can achieve given that we are willing to work together. It only took 1 year from inception to implementation. The Coast Guards are now starting first missions at the Bulgarian-Turkish border as well as at the Turkish border, and we have also made progress on tackling unemployment. The European Youth Guarantee is one such successful scheme which is being applied across the EU. There are at the moment 1.4 million less young unemployed people in the EU than there were in 2013. Here in Malta, the youth unemployment rate has remained at or below 11%, which is amongst the lowest in Europe. The EU's Youth Employment Initiative, a 6.4 billion euro resource, has been central to the swift setup of national youth guarantee schemes. And around 9 million young people have taken up an offer. Most of them have resulted in final employment. Also, a European Solidarity Corps will also be launched. This aims to attract young people under 30 to volunteer, and they can assist and they can aid in rebuilding communities, for example, following natural disasters. I'm talking Europe now, not Malta. And they can also work on the reception and integration on refugees. For this purpose, a single web portal will be set up so that companies, NGOs or local authorities can also attract young people quickly. I know that next week Commissioner Oettinger will be coming, so he will be discussing the digital single market as well. And we have made this, the digital single market, we have made a lot of progress on reducing barriers, especially to online content services. And we have taken steps to also reform telecoms and copyright rules. In addition to that, we have also tackled VAT rules on e-commerce, publications, e-books, and all these are being made simpler. At the same time, we are also looking forward at the free flow of data while fully respecting rules on a very important aspect of data protection. At a global level, the Commission has led the way for a more sustainable future on the 4th October, just days after agreement by the EU ministers. The European Parliament approved the EU ratification of the Paris Agreement on tackling climate change. And the EU ratification also meant that the threshold of 55 countries and 55% of global emissions was closed. So that was a very important milestone as well. This triggered the entry into force of the Paris Agreement, and here we were also glad to note that Malta was the fifth, if I'm not mistaken, EU country to ratify this agreement. With regards to oceans, I remember the last time that I was here, we discussed the oceans and the need for ocean governance. I also discussed this in detail for next year's presidency, and in preparation for this, we will publish a communication before the end of this year how to deliver, how we think we could deliver better ocean governance, not just in Europe, but we are taking this globally. And this increased focus on the ocean comes under my portfolio, and that is why I'm hoping that the Maltese presidency will act on this as well. Our approach will aim to improve the safety, the security, and the sustainability of our oceans. And it will highlight the often ignored role that the ocean plays in climate change. In fact, we cannot even discuss climate change without discussing the oceans, when we know that the ocean is the prime climate regulator, absorbing some 90% of the planet's heat, absorbing 30% of the planet's carbon, giving some 60% of the planet's oxygen. So this is a very important issue which we are taking globally. And Malta has always played a very important role in this since the late 60s, when it was Arvid Pardo who set the ball rolling in the United Nations General Assembly. Closer to home, our pursuit of sustainability is also embodied by the swift adaptation of the 2015 Circular Economy Package. Even here, the presidency will have an important part to play. And with the Circular Economy Package, we are coming out with a plastic strategy, which will also assist the reduction of marine litter. In October next year, we will be having our Oceans Conference in Malta. I think it's going to be 7th, 9th of October next year. And this year, the conference was hosted in Washington, next year in Malta, the year after Indonesia, and then in Norway. The last point that I want to make is on our new Mediterranean strategy to tackle overfishing. We have great concerns about fishing in the Mediterranean. I'm not just talking about Malta. The Mediterranean stocks, 93% of those stocks are being overfished. And this is not in the interest of the fishermen. At times our fishermen think that if we let them do whatever they think is best for them, they will benefit. On the long run, they will not. In fact, when we compare the profitability of the sector in regions, in areas where fishing is highly managed against that of the Mediterranean, when it's not managed at all, there they have a high profitability. In the Mediterranean, it's almost a loss-making industry. To conclude, I would like to return to the issue that I mentioned before, transparency and democratic oversight, and to the value of your role. And in his State of the Union address, the President reaffirmed that he wants to lead a political commission. And as such, it is very important for us commissioners to answer to your opinions and suggestions whenever and in whatever manner we can. In 2010-15, we received some 350 opinions from national parliaments. In the first 9 months of this year, we have already received some 434 opinions. So we continue to do our utmost to make certain that Parliament, the voice of Parliament, is heard in the Commission. So basically, that was the broader aspects of this speech. It's the second time you hear it now, so
it wasn't that long. So. You're used to longer speeches here in Parliament, especially. Well, thank you very much. And now I open the floor for comments or questions from members of Parliament. Honorable Agus Decelis.
Thank you very much. Honorable Vella told us that the European Union is discussing the plastic strategy. I think one of the biggest mistakes that our country did is when we changed our policy from the use of recycling glass bottles to the plastic bottles. Can you give us more exactly what the Commission is doing on this plastic policy, please?
Marine litter is one of the biggest international challenges that we have. Just to give you an idea, when we talk about marine litter, we're talking about what we call litter continents. 5 gyres in total, bigger than the European Union. When we talk about marine litter, 80% of it is plastics. When we talk about plastics, many seem to think that it's just plastics floating on the surface. Actually, when plastic disintegrates, it converts into microplastics, which go down some 30-35 meters below the surface. And we are finding that this is killing birds, it's killing mammals, it's killing fish. And the biggest concern is that traces of plastics have already been found in fish. Imagine, we throw plastics in the oceans, the fish eat the plastic, and then we eat the fish. I'm exaggerating a bit, but it's not such a big exaggeration because everyone is... the estimate is that by 2030, there will be about one-third the amount of fish, one-third of that will be plastics. And by 2050, there will be more plastic than fish in our oceans.
I will take chicken for dinner.
For the not here, not here.
We have to check if the
Malta,
we have to check if the chicken have plastics.
So, in the circular economy, the idea is to keep the raw material in circulation. So, when a product reaches its end of life, instead of landfilling the product with its material, the material is recycled back into production. If we can do that, and we have to do that also with plastics, that will reduce the amount of plastic going into marine litter. Each and every member state has got a commitment. We have to reduce the amount of plastics that we waste by some 50% by 2030. And it's a commitment that all the member states are taking seriously. It's up to the member states, obviously, how they do it, but the commitment is there.
Thank you. Any more interventions? Honourable Zambit Demek.
Ciao, sir.
Well, certainly a word of welcome is due to the Commissioner responsible for justice from our end, and it is always certainly a pleasure also to be back in the company of our former parliamentary colleague. Perhaps I can start with a couple of remarks and questions to the Commissioner for Justice. Certainly a word of good wishes with regard to your task on the implementation of the European Public Prosecutor Office, because I think it is a very, very important tool, even in enhancing the very concept of justice on a European Union basis. Hopefully the unanimity can be achieved, even if I understand you would, in failing that, opt maybe for an enhanced cooperation procedure. But what would possibly be of interest to us is also some elaboration about the tasks of the prosecutor in this regard, because I know that the precise remit has been even the subject of some discussion over the years. From the justice perspective, certainly a fundamental, a very important area remains the protection of fundamental human rights. And here we have, again, the evolution of the European Union's own Charter of Fundamental Human Rights, and also the prospect of the European Union acceding to the European Convention of Human Rights. Now, I understand, of course, that the European Union Charter is, by definition, an improvement on former existing texts, because the fundamental rule in that Charter is that it can never be interpreted in such a manner as to provide for a lesser form of protection than, say, the European Convention. But again, what would be happening in this regard, both at the Convention level, at the Charter level, and for its further? And then one final question from my end with regard how further can one enhance the consumer rights, which are obviously a very fundamental part of your remit. And to our friend Carmen Uvella, if you allow me one question, and now wearing even the hat as the opposition spokesperson for migration, you made the reference in the State of the Union address to what, of course, the President of the Commission, Juncker, said, well, in general with regard to leading a long-term vision, but also with regard to migration, which, as we know, has been set as one of the priorities of this particular Commission. One notes what you refer to as substantial progress, effect of relocation of 13,000 refugees. Perhaps my interpretation is not as optimistic. Normally I am very optimistic. And I say that because the number of 13,000, you will agree with me, needs to be seen within the context of the target. And the target there is of 160,000. So it is still a very small number. And I believe the resettlement and the relocation programs need to be implemented by September 2017. So we're now less than a year away. Of course, Malta will hopefully give a big push in this direction, so this is a subject close to our own hearts during our presidency. But you do face some difficult situations, and that is putting it rather diplomatically, with some countries not exactly living up to their targets and the quotas indicated in their regard, even if the word quotas was no longer used, let's say targets maybe. So we are some distance away, let's express it in those terms. What can the Commission do to come anywhere closer to the target of 160,000 in all?
Thank you. I give you the floor.
If justice could be given priority, it should be. European Prosecutor's Office, of course, this is not an easy file because some say once we are establishing it, it should also tackle with the crime such as organized violent crime, terrorism, smuggling, trafficking, and all this. My reply on this is the main added value of EPPO will be that it will be specialized, highly professional body focused on financial crime only, while having Eurojust stronger in investigation and prosecution of these violent kinds of crime. So, in fact, what we do is the reorganization of combating against crime, because we need to see both legs of the same body. And enhanced cooperation, this is early to say, because, of course, having unanimity is a hard task. We have some member states where I can imagine they will not be there, Sweden, Holland. Some member states which I need to have there, Poland, Hungary. And does it go out? On the record. Okay, so I greet Polish colleagues. Yeah. But no. I want to be absolutely open with you and concrete, because I guess this is what you ask about. These countries are the receivers of massive support from EU funds. I cannot imagine to establish EPPO to prosecute the fraud and corruption on structural funds, not having there the country which has the biggest amount. It doesn't make logic. So I have to fight more, and still I have three weeks or four weeks to convince them. So on the competence, you are right, there are still talks, but this is solvable. Charter, we have now slowed down a bit the work on acceding to the EU convention, because there are some legal question marks whether we can do it or not. So I don't know. I am not very, very much convinced that we will do it over this Commission mandate, but it's not on my table, so that's why I cannot tell you where we are with analyzing the situation. Consumers' rights, yes, we want to increase consumers' rights by doing REFIT. We are now testing six directives which contain the consumers' rights, and we want to modernize the legislation to get rid of obsolete things, to do it more fit for 21st century, so for digital, to capture the new trends. And we want to have this legislation readable for normal people. For me, consumer, European consumer for me, is not a lawyer who is able to read difficult legal texts. And it is at the same time somebody who should be able to take responsible decisions. So nobody who would like to say, look, we are coming with magical legislation which will protect you fully. This is not for me where we should go. Last comment on consumers' rights. I am quite investing a lot of energy and time in tackling with the issue of Dieselgate. I want Volkswagen to take voluntary action and to compensate in some way the owners of the affected cars, regardless how this will end up, because we do not have such possibilities like United States Federation. here we see the limits of European Union in this field. I want to use this opportunity for proposing some kind of collective action for the consumers and small companies in Europe, because I am convinced that this Volkswagen case caught us unprepared, and that the people unprepared for taking the defense in their hands. So we have member states where they can only go individually to the court, and facing such a problem which we have now with Volkswagen, we are not equipped. And I am convinced that this will be the last thing I will say, because I need to give space for Carmenu. We see the trend that the stronger will be even stronger, and the weak will be weaker. Because we see the growth of the influence of big corporations, big IT platforms, and we are not able to come with such regulation which will protect the people and protect the small ones, including the small companies. We need to equip them to do something on their own. That's my holy conviction. So Volkswagen case gave me very good hook and very good opportunity to come with the collective redress form. Of course, I'm not speaking about class action according to the American pattern. This is something which we are not ready in Europe. We have totally different legal system, but something which will equip the people, the individuals, to join forces. I think Europe will need it. So,
migration, and it will continue to be one of the Commission's priorities. It will continue to take up a good part of our work. I can tell you that this is one of the weekly agendas, one of the weekly items on our agenda, and our colleague Dimitris is continuously working on this. I think there was progress made, because we still remember the times when migration was managed by crisis. There was no plan, there was no strategy during the time when Italy, Greece, Malta, we were trying to tell everyone what was happening in the Mediterranean. At least now we have a long-term strategy. We have a strategy to address the problem at source, and the European Union is doing a lot at source, especially in African countries, by supporting them through funds, through technical assistance. It's doing a lot during the transit period, whether in Turkey or in the Mediterranean. We're trying to, as I said, save as many lives as possible during the transit operation. And we're also trying to do a lot at the end place. That's where the relocation comes in. The whole migration issue is further compounded by the fact that you get legal mixed with illegal migrants, so that problem is compounded again. It is unfortunate in this day and age to see even member states putting up borders between and borders coming up between neighboring countries. I don't think this will solve anything. I think it is about time that all the member states shoulder their responsibility. In what I said in college, and I will repeat it here, is that we cannot expect any single member state to be a part-time European. You cannot be a European when it comes to the benefits, but then you're not a European when it comes to responsibilities. So we don't expect that any member state should be a part-time European.
Honorable Frederick Azzopardi.
Yes, thank you very much. I would like to put some questions to Commissioner Jourova. Commissioner, you stated that it is estimated that there are about 50 billion of fraud a year in the EU. It would be interesting if you could inform us which type of fraud that is mostly contributing to this large amount, this quite large amount of money. And as regards the restructuring, where you refer that 100 companies are being dissolved every day in the EU, and this is resulting to 2 million jobs being lost every year. It would be, I would like to ask which are the companies that are mostly being affected and which are being in the solution. Those companies, what type of companies are being affected? And one last final question is about the EU plans that are envisaged to help companies that are to be dissolved. What help that the EU is intending, is projecting to help them from dissolution?
Okay, you ask about the kinds of fraud. So it is mainly carousel fraud and missing trader issue.
Yeah.
So this is very clear, and this is happening between every member state, and this is simply everywhere. This must be understood that we do this EPPO action as a part of wider action against tax avoidance and tax fraud. And there is a lot of things planned under the remit of Pierre Moscovici, who does the financial things. The preventive part is very strong, and I always say I am at the bad end of it. When the prevention does not work, we have to come with repression, and it is the hopefully efficient action of the European Prosecutor's Office who will investigate and prosecute the things which the member states cannot. Because when this carousel fraud discovered, the states create joint investigating teams ad hoc for this concrete case. And after they finish the work with different results, successful, not successful, they stop working. So this is ad hoc work, while EPPO will work on permanent basis. And there will be the collection of information, gathering of knowledge and expertise. This is much more efficient. You asked about who is affected. I think from our impact assessment, it is mainly the range of smaller companies. As I said before, the small and weak will be even weaker, and we must do our best to help them. By many other things, but also by this proposal for restructuring. We want to guarantee for them the stay period when they can, then they have the chance to resolve their financial problems, not to send them directly to liquidation. We want to create conditions for better balancing possibilities of the credit, the voting rights of the creditors, not to have their blocking minority, which would cause that the company will be sent to liquidation. We will impose more pressure on the member states to create some financial support and advisory support for the companies in financial troubles. So this is very, very complex and comprehensive series of measures, very concrete measures, which we plan under this proposal. We will submit it on the 22nd of November, and then Maltese presidency will take it over, and we will also be looking forward to your comments for this.
Thank you. Honourable Poirot, Mr. Bonnage.
Perhaps one last question, but a very short one. Maybe a very short one. Obviously, both constitution and cultural traditions very close the 28 countries, right? So how do you plan that as commissioner for three important pillars, whilst respecting, obviously, the fundamental rights and the rule of law of every particular country, you can come up with a harmonized and consolidated, perhaps, policy vision for strengthening, for example, citizens' rights and fighting gender equality, for example.
Oh, I'm talking too long. Yeah. Somebody should have warned me.
She's at home.
I will answer in a very simple, maybe a little bit primitive way. I always say that I have there the things of brain, which is EPO, civil justice thing, a sphere and so on, and the matters of heart, which is fundamental rights sphere. And here I think that we can analyze whatever we can, how far we are in the member states and what are the legal conditions and so on. But we must be very steady, especially now in this difficult period for Europe, to be absolutely clear what's good and what's bad, what's acceptable and what's intolerable. And this is, for instance, the case of hate speech online. Because here we have clearly the list of vulnerable groups of people whose rights are endangered in the most severe way by those who are attacking them. So here we must come, and this is based on the Fundamental Rights Charter and all the legislation regarding anti-discrimination. But we must come and say, look, this is not possible to tolerate. And these are our ways to stop it. I think that now we are in the period when we politicians must be much more brave and much more strong in what we say and much more clear, because we are relativizing so many things. And once we started to relativize this sphere of fundamental rights, this is the start of the end.
Well, before coming to a conclusion, allow me to ask a question to you, Commissioner, as regards justice as well. But in my private practice, as I met cases regarding family matters, decisions of the courts of justice relating to family matters and judgments given to families in Malta. There is a directive that states that the judgments should be recognized throughout the European Union, except for Denmark. Because Denmark, yes, they have to opt out. Is there any work being done to get Denmark on board as well? Because there have been cases where there were two conflicting judgments, one in the country and another one in Denmark, for obviously people coming from Denmark.
The only possibility is that I will collect the concrete things and concrete problems and speak to the Danish Prime Minister, who is liberal as well as I am.
It can help.
Well, I didn't want to make a joke of it.
No, because it's
very difficult moment.
Exactly.
Because this is concerning children. Right?
Children, yes, exactly.
So give me the more information about this. And
okay. Thank you very much.
But usually these opt-outs are very deeply rooted.
Yeah, I know. That's
so they are not willing too much to change.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, commissioners, thank you very much for your presence here. Thank you. Hope you enjoy your stay.